Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. New guest to the program, Marcos Resendiz, attorney at law. You do estate planning with Sachs Law, S-A-X Law. Marcos, good to talk to you, my friend.
Hey, good talking to you too, John.
Oh, you've got a radio voice.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I do like how you said, let's get law powered.
Let's get legal powered.
Yeah, legal powered. That's right. I do like that.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
So I'm an attorney. I've been an attorney for about since 2016. I don't do math that well. That's not what we do. We don't do a whole lot of math. Since 2016, so I was licensed here in Illinois. I'm licensed in Texas as well. I graduated from UIC. John Marshall was John Marshall Law School then, mm-hmm. but it's UIC now. Great move, I thought.
Right.
So it comes with some, you know, pretty great gym perks that I hope to use one year.
It makes sense to me. How'd you get into estate law and probate law? Like, what about that interests you?
Yeah, so it was more of a life choice versus, you know, something that I always wanted to be a part of. Before I actually got into estate planning, I wanted to do other areas of law because, you know, that's what I thought would drive me. But, you know, I met a really good friend of mine who has since passed away, you know, during COVID, you know, and we worked together and we just worked really well. And he was a probate attorney for many years, since I think the 80s. And, you know, we established a good rapport. He taught, you know, a lot about estate planning, the importance of it. You know, it just kind of developed from that.
When we say estate planning, I feel like some people feel like you have to be like a feudal lord or lady of Britain to have an estate. No, that's not the case at all.
No, not at all. And you know, part of what I found as an additional, you know, purpose to be an attorney is helping people sort of demystify, you know, what the law is, because the more that, you know, we're knowledgeable on that, the better we are as individuals, and the better we can plan, you know, for our families from here and many generations, you know, to come.
Probably one of the few areas of law where everyone's going to deal with this in one way or the other at some point in their life or when they're gone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a hurdle and a challenge in and of itself. I mean, even for me, you know, it wasn't easy to discuss estate planning, you know, with my family or even, you know, think about planning for something for myself, because there's that idea that, you know, I do have a timestamp for, you know, for lack of a better word.
Right.
And I can't guarantee that I'll just pass away. So there is a possibility of me being ill or me being, you know, unable to do, you know, things that I would normally be able to do if I had that capacity.
You bring up a great point, because I think when we think estate planning, we think, here's what's going to happen after I'm dead, which is never fun to think about. Right. You don't want to. But boy, you bring up a great thing there, is that estate planning, getting it while you're of sound mind and body, is so important, because as we know, thankfully we're living longer and longer, God willing, but with that comes dementia, comes Alzheimer's, not for everyone, of course, but for a lot of people. So estate planning really kind of has to be done oftentimes years before, sometimes decades before you pass, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's important to do it at that time, because, you know, obviously last minute, you know, haste creates waste, they say. You know, to your point, that estate planning, you know, if you're doing those things that require capacity, let's say you don't want to yet, right? Let's say you're trying to take the easy route and say, you know what, I don't want to handle this right now. Instead of making it a situation about, you know, whether I'm capacitated or not, whether trying to think about that challenge just at this very moment, if you're not ready, think of it as that, well, who would I have in my group that I would have do things for me if I can do it? And then just think of it that way. Think of it, well, maybe they're already doing it now. You know, a lot of my clients, they have family, you know, daughters, sons that are already doing these things for them,
mm-hmm.
but it's not an official, you know, power
document.
Of attorney,
right?
An official document.
Right. And I think that's the other thing, is I think we all maybe have told each other what we want to have happened, but that only gets you so far.
Yeah, it does.
Not far at all.
As an attorney, what I've learned is that there's a risk assessment that happens, right? And absolutely, you should comply with everything that you're supposed to legally.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that. But those relationships that you just mentioned, those things actually do occur. And yeah, you can make it, you know, a good while that way. So it creates this illusion that things are okay. So, so there's the rub, right? It's that you do have some things that are going to take care of. But once, you know, once you get some pushback, you know, that's when you have to come in with a certified document.
I also think that there's this hope and expectation. Let's say you have a couple kids, they get along great, your family's in great shape. That's wonderful. These things are stressful things, and you never know what could happen, and arguments between relatives, unfortunately, are a reality, right?
Yeah, that's you know, those
we don't want to think it would happen, but right. It does, even to the most cohesive families.
Yeah,
this is a really important decisions, and someone might have one vision for what happens to the estate, and that's a legitimate one and it makes sense, and the other brother or sister might have a very legitimate concern about that.
Yeah,
they both might even be right, you might say.
Right. That's right,
but it could split them apart.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, it definitely doesn't mean that that's what the person who, you know, is trying to make those decisions, you know, wants. But also, yeah, the family, you know, strife, it's kind of an emotional thing, which is why I hesitate a little, John, you know, when you have a family that before they even approached you, they talk of how well, you know, how united they were.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sort of see the transition or the transformation into this, you know, sort of either, like you said, either one person is doing one thing and the other is doing person, but the other one's doing another thing, but there's no, you know, communication. And I, you know, and sometimes I wish that they would, you know, really reach out ahead of time before that, but there's, you know, there's no way of knowing who is going to be, you know, either the cause or who's going to continue on with, you know, creating that sort of disagreement among the family.
Talking with Marcos Resendiz, attorney at law. You can give him a call at 773-542-3660. 773-542-3660. Sachs Law, S-A-X Law. You want to take a couple phone calls?
Yeah, we can, absolutely.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. Let's go to Patty. Yeah, we've been talking about this in like kind of broader language. Let's get some specifics on this. And Patty, what's your question? And Marcos will do his best to give you some information.
Hi, Marcos. Thank you very much. I am contemplating rewriting a will. I own a house and its contents, the bank accounts, and several investments. What's the simplest thing for me to do when I am in a situation where the person who will inherit everything that I have lives distant from me, and I cannot really appoint him as executor?
Okay, so you want someone else, and you want that person to be your brother. So in your will currently, is it to this other person?
Yes.
Okay.
However, I'm going to simplify the will.
Okay.
So, I mean, it will be to my brother and his family.
Okay. I'll stop asking questions and I'll let the lawyer do it. Marcos, what do you think?
No, that was a good question, actually. Okay. That's what I was going to go for. Because it sounded to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that because this person is out of state, you're concerned that someone here locally will be able to sort of assist in that administration.
Right.
Okay, yeah. And so to get to that first, you know, I guess close to answer mm-hmm. as I can get.
Yeah.
You know, I think that getting an attorney, maybe the attorney that drafted the will already for you, to meet with or discuss that with the individual that you have left in your will, and, you know, either get updated contact information, but definitely establish a relationship so that if the time does come and someone does have to administer that estate plan, that the wheels that have already been in motion, in the sense that there's a relationship there.
Wait, are you saying so Patty needs to make sure that the old will, the will that she doesn't want to be in effect anymore, has been clearly cleared away, or like she has to and notify the people that thought that they were going to inherit that they may not anymore? Is that what you're saying?
If the plan is to, and so what it was my understanding that she was going to leave. She just wanted to simplify the will.
Okay.
But also there was a concern on who was going to be the executor.
Okay.
And so to just in isolating that particular executor situation for anyone that, you know, may have this question, either that's, you know, on the line or not, that in most situations when a will does have to get probated mean that this person has passed away and we have to administer now what their wishes were, that individual will more than likely need to hire a local attorney, right, to handle that. And so if you get ahead of that, you hire an attorney, or maybe the attorney that you've already had to draft this or this first will,
mm-hmm.
You know, have a relationship so that whoever the executor is, they'll be in contact. So if something does happen, it's going to have to be dealt by the attorney anyway. The attorney may not have any issues going forward with that executor being out of state.
Patty, do you still have a relationship with the attorney who drafted the will in the first place?
No, it's going to be someone completely different.
Okay.
But I was wondering if I actually needed to appoint an executor or if I just have a lawyer take care of it. What is the simplest thing, not just for me, but for the people who will be inheriting my estate?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't want to cause them great burden in getting it completed.
That's nice of you, Patty. What do you think, Marcos?
Yeah, I think, you know... honestly, you know, that's a good way to think about it, because you don't, you know, you want anyone scrambling, like she said, you know, around to try to find these documents or what to do. I think that for something such as yourself, like a real estate, you know, bank accounts, you know, even if you have an automobile, I think a trust is probably, you know, what your estate plan or the estate plan that would get you to the simplest, you know, sort of, you know, barometer of estate mm-hmm. planning. I think, because they're, you know, things are no longer in your name. They're in a entity that you've created, you know, that's supposed to manage these things, you know, once you're gone and potentially, you know, for many, many years and many, many generations to come. So I think a trust is probably, you know, the mechanism that gets you to, you know, simplifying things when you leave things behind.
Because with a trust, you avoid probate.
That you do.
And is it easier on a trust, especially with what Patty's talking about for her brother, if the rules are kind of set, it makes sense, they're all written out in that trust, and then he then becomes the executor of that trust as opposed to him trying to deal with probate and all that. So does that make sense, Patty? Maybe a trust might be the best option for you.
That's very clear, and that is exactly what I was hoping. You would be able to provide me with a clear path to, you know, what do I call what I'm asking for of a lawyer.
Yeah, you want a trust for your estate.
Yeah, and you know, just for terminology's sake, it would be a trustee of the trust and not an executor.
So yeah, you'd make your brother the trustee, okay?
Yes, thank you very much. Very helpful.
For sure. And Marcos's phone number, by the way, 773-542-3660. Boy, we got a lot of questions coming in, Marcos.
Yeah, that's great. I had to I had to use the word trustee because I asked some of my, you know, fellow section members with the ISBA Trust and Estates Council to listen in.
Okay.
And I told them that, you know, to be sure to tell me, you know, what they thought. And so if I let her say executor or let you say executor for the trust, I know I was going to get some emails.
Yeah, okay, good. this is an interesting question. Hi, John and John's guest. What's the best place to keep? Where's the best place to keep a will? Is it a safety deposit box? What measures should be in place so that others know, like, where to find it?
Yeah, that's a great question. It comes up a lot for sure. You know, and the way that I respond to it, I don't think creates that much confidence in my response.
Okay.
So I just want to let you know, you know, because you mentioned the safety deposit box, right? So let's say you have a safety deposit box at the post office. Well, on the outside looking in, sounds like a good idea. It's secure, right? It sounds good, safety deposit box. But if someone passes away, and let's say we get to before we let people know where the safety deposit box is, you know, someone has to go to the post office. They have to, I think it's submit an application along with an affidavit with the death certificate that this individual has passed away. And then that gets reviewed and approved.
So it's a whole thing to get to the safety deposit box. It's not just I walk in and I get
it. Correct. Yeah, okay. Correct.
Okay, so where do we put it then?
Yeah, well, I'm not dissuading anyone from doing that either,
okay.
Right? It's sort of, you know, in programming, there's more than one way to do something, right?
Okay.
And so, a safety deposit box is good. So then but you think, okay, well, I have to have something in place so that this process is a lot easier, right? On the front end, is it appointing another person on your safety deposit box? Maybe so. The other option is to keep it, you know, in a safe at home. If you have a safe at home, that's fine too. Obviously the same, you know, situation, make sure that, you know, your passwords or your, you know, combination. Yeah, whatever it is that you're using. Yeah, or your thumb.
Don't just leave them with a screwdriver and say, good luck. Right. Hey, we got to take a break before the news. You're sticking around, though. Marcos Resendi is attorney at law for Sachs Law, S-A-X Law. The phone number is 773-542-3660. And our phone number, 312-981-7200. Keep the calls coming. We already got Brian on the line. We'll hopefully get to him after the news, which comes up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN. I got a shout-out saying that there's sun in Downers Grove, which, of course, makes me happy because that's where I go after I come off the radio. And I got some daylilies to rip out of my yard. A lot of listeners are probably sick of me talking, and Marcos Resendi joins us. Maybe they are sick of me talking in general, but they're sick of me talking about my house in Downers Grove, which I moved into last year. It's my first time owning a home, and I had no idea how invasive daylilies are, and I am ripping them out. I tried transplanting them. I feel like I should put them in some buckets and put them on the curb. If anyone wants, I don't like killing plants.
No, that's...
If you want some daylilies, maybe I should do that.
Yeah.
I won't give my address here on the air, but if you happen to pass by a house with 20,000 buckets of daylilies in the front, that's me. Marcos, we're talking about probate and estate planning, Sachs Law, S-A-X Law. Your phone number is 773-542-3660, and you can, anyone, either the listeners that are calling in or texting in, they can call you and you can help out with what? Wills, trusts, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Give me a ring. Yeah. You know, because obviously, you know, so with law school, right? What they did to you is that they taught you where wrongs are and where mm-hmm. rights are, and you know all that. So you have, while you may not focus on that particular area of law, you have a good idea on whether you've been injured or mm-hmm. whether you've been harmed, or you know, things like that. And so, someone that you trust, it's an attorney, you know, that you ask questions about, you know, estate planning, you know, don't feel like you shouldn't also address other things with them, because they still may lead you in the right direction.
Oh, with anything beyond.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know. 708 wants to know, if my wife and I only have one child, do we need a will?
Yeah. You know, this is, you know, obviously a very sensitive situation, right? You know, child, I don't know how old the child is, but, you know, let's assume it's a minor. It's, you know, and I guess it doesn't really change a whole lot depending on, you know, actually, you know, I take that back. If it's a minor child, a child, you know, that has a disability, you know, those are very sensitive things. And a lot of planning should be involved with ensuring that if something were to happen to you, you know, or your spouse, or if, you know, if you're not in a marriage, just yourself, you know, what happens, with that child, and, you know, what plans you have, for taking care of it, you know, beyond your life.
Mm-hmm. So yes, you should have a will.
Yeah, sorry, yes.
No. I just want to make sure I got that right, because I feel like people say, well, they're going to inherit it. And maybe they will, right?
Yeah.
But maybe. Write it down. Maybe they won't, right? Yeah. Or things can happen that are unforeseen. Might as well just guarantee it right down on a will.
Well, you know, I've seen where with a minor child that I pause because, you know, there's a confidentiality thing, right? But it's possible to have a minor child and a child that's of majority, and the majority child to take from the minor child.
Oh, like if you have two kids.
Yeah, if you don't have.
And one is over, and majority means over what, 18?
Over 18,
okay,
yeah.
Over 18.
So, you know, so it is good to have a will and a plan in place for that situation, you know, for your minor child, you know, for any children that you have.
Okay.
Just get
a will. Let's go to the phone lines. Yeah. Just get a will.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's go to Dawn. Dawn, what's your question?
Hi. My question is, my dad originally put me as the executor of his will because I'm the oldest. And then his ex-wife, I have a half brother with, she insisted that the will be changed to add him as a co-executor, and I'm just wondering what that means.
Is your father still alive, Dawn, by the way, if you don't mind me asking?
Yes, he is, but he's failing, and I'm the primary, I'm the one who flies back and forth to take care of him, and he's coming to live with me soon, so...
So you're curious
sure
about
how this all works.
Brother...
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think about that, Marcos?
I don't know if I'm particularly clear on the other side, right? The brother is, can you?
He's my half-brother, so my dad remarried and had a brother, and he's 24, and I'm 53.
And they're not married anymore, though?
I'm the primary. Pardon me?
They're not married anymore, those two?
No, not anymore.
Okay, but so the half-brother is still on the will, is what you're saying, as a co-executor.
Well, yeah, he's been added after he originally only had me as the executor.
How does that work, Marcos, when you have two people on a will like that?
Yeah, so, you know, if I understand this correctly, Dad had a will already, and he had named her the executor, and I guess, you know, at some point, you know, after that will, he either amended it, which is usually a codicil, right? That's just, you know, follow the same requirements that a will would have. But let's say he did a codicil or amendment of some kind where the executor was changed now to a co-executor relationship. You know, if Dad had capacity and all the other things sort of match, you know, with the requirements, it sounds like, you know, they can do that.
Right.
They can modify things.
And how does that work? Like, how do two people make these decisions together?
So it's a tough one because, you know, everyone has equal footing, right? And so agreements must be made in order to proceed with that administration. And, you know, in that potentially comes litigation, you know, if agreement or meeting of the minds doesn't occur.
Like if Dawn and the half-brother can't agree on a certain thing, it might end up, they have to go to court just to resolve that.
That's correct.
So it'd be cheaper if they could come to some resolutions on some of these things, even though Dawn, you may feel, especially if he's coming to live with you, like you're maybe more entitled. It doesn't matter from a legal perspective, does it, Marcos?
And I don't think so. It might be Dad's way of trying to make them work together.
Wow. Dawn, that may not be the answer you want, but that's the answer you get.
No. I appreciate the clarification. Yeah. Thank you. I love your show.
Thank you, Dawn, and good luck, okay?
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Brian.
All right, we got a first love client. That's great.
Oh, for sure. Marcos, this is what happens when you come on WGN.
That's awesome.
Our listeners love us. They love us giving this information.
I'm feeling it.
Yeah, hopefully get an answer from Brian. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your question?
I love you guys, too.
Oh, look at that. Marcos, too. Man. Come on. Here we go.
The sun is coming out.
Yeah.
So I wanted to thank you for taking my call. I'm the executor on an estate, and there's a stock account. And I understand in dividing the stock account between the family trust and the marital trust that there's certain benefits to having certain types of stocks that go into one and certain type that go into the other.
Huh.
I was wondering if Marcos could add some clarification.
Marcos,
is the best stocks to move into the family trust and the marital trust?
Marcos, is that a good question for you, or is that more of a financial planner might be the better answer?
So, yeah, maybe, because, you know, I always go to the agreement, right? What stocks are we talking about? You know, what...
Is there no game plan in the... Is this a will or a trust, by the way, Brian?
It's a trust, and I was told that there's a benefit between, like, putting dividend stocks or growth stocks into one, and that there was a benefit to dividing them in a certain way.
Yeah, but it didn't lay out where each one goes in the trust. It doesn't lay out that plan.
No, it does not.
Okay. I don't know. Marcos, what do you think?
If you have stocks that are outside of a trust or will,
are they outside of the trust or are they in the trust?
Yeah,
Brian? They're in the trust.
So they're in the trust, but there was no plan. I guess I'm confused on why you have, like, shouldn't it have been laid out with what is there?
Well, I was told that when the person passed away, that it went from a revocable trust to an irrevocable trust.
Yeah.
And so there's a stock account now.
Okay.
And the stock account needs to be divided between the family trust and the marital trust.
Okay.
And
so the trustee probably needs to do that. Who's the trustee?
It's Brian, right?
Brian,
yes,
the trustee.
Correct.
So that's why. Okay, we caught up to you, Brian, now. No, I was in the same boat. So now you need, it's up to your discretion on where to move those. Marcos,
correct.
I have other financial advisors if you think that's a good question for one of them, perhaps.
You know, or maybe, hey, let's talk, Brian, about
off the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell you what, Brian, write down this number, okay? Marcos might have better ideas for you. We don't want to give away too much advice over the air without him knowing the specifics. You got a pen?
Okay.
You got a pen near you, Marcos?
Yeah. Is this a 773-542-3660?
Why, we didn't even need to say it. Look at Brian.
You've
there
been
we
listening,
go.
Brian. Yeah. Sorry.
I love you guys.
Yeah, write that down. Call Marcos. He'll talk with you on Monday, okay?
Okay.
Well, I didn't mean to
do that.
I didn't mean to assign Monday, Marcos.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
You know, like I go through the Rolodex in my head of like things. So I go to like the tax, you know, section, and then I go to, well, you know, the corporation side. Where was it incorporated? You know, where are these stocks coming from? Mm-hmm. Is it Google stock?
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we have our fine friends over at Mesero, and we get questions about when we do real estate topics about the money situation.
Yeah.
And sometimes you want to. A financial person to look at it and analyze it.
Yeah.
I know you could probably help out with a lot of it, but they can also help you get there too.
Yeah, there are tax benefits. You know, there's generation skipping tax. You know, there are tax mechanisms in estate planning, but you know, I think that the specificity of, you know, what are we looking at here really counts.
Right. Someone wanted to know if please ask your guests, how do we, my sibling and I, get our other sibling to be transparent and give us any info about a will and trust and insurance policies. The other sibling is the trustee.
Yeah.
That's that happens a lot, I bet, right?
Yeah, it does. It does happen. And, you know, I look at it a lot of ways. I think that they're in a good position in with respect to knowing that their parents, you know, had that much involvement, you know, if, I guess assuming that the parents are the ones that drafted the trust, but,
right.
You know, assuming that this is what they wanted, you know, and I said earlier in the show that this was probably the thing that makes things the simplest, the trust, right? That they have this knowledge that this is what their parents chose, or this is the person that drafted it. This is what they wanted to do with it. And, you know, the important thing with that is that if there are terms within it that someone is required to do, then they have to do those things. One of them is, you know, can the heirs or can, you know, beneficiaries have the ability to request a copy of said trust? And, you know, if it's not in there, you know, it would be up to the trustee's discretion to determine whether, you know, that particular release of information is necessary.
Let me stop you right there. Okay, so sibling one is the trustee.
Yeah.
Let's say the trust says, by the way, trustee, you must send a copy of this trust to your other siblings.
Yeah.
That person has to do it no matter what.
Well, you know, people don't have to do anything. They don't want to, but they should.
You can take it to court, right?
Yeah, for sure.
If that wasn't explicitly said,
right,
that older sibling can just
it could be up to their discretion. Yeah.
But what can't be up to their discretion, let's say it doesn't say, like, you must share this trust information with the other two.
Yeah.
But it does say you must give them one third of the estate or whatever it is.
Yeah.
They still have to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, but what happens if I'm a brother that can't see the trust copy?
Yeah.
Do I take my older sibling to court to be like, I crack this thing open?
Yeah, and you would use the fact that, you know, they are entitled to this $10,000 that they think is, you know, as part of the reason to, hey, release this thing because I think that I'm owed from it. And so we need to, you know, proceed on, you know, why it is that you feel you don't have to share that with me.
Yeah, because it's like, how would the sibling know what they're entitled to without seeing it?
Yeah.
Okay, so then let's flip the script. Let's say you're writing a trust.
Right.
And you have three kids.
Yeah.
You can still name one trustee. That's fine if that's what you want to do. Can you name all three as like a group?
Yeah.
And majority rules on decisions?
Yep, absolutely. You can definitely create, you know, I had this friend, John Moore, who would say committees. You know, you could assign committees. He was a, you know, big finance guy or a big corporation guy, but you could do committees, you know, and have members of the committee decide, you know, are we releasing stuff? You know, they can you know, they can challenge what the trustee acts are.
Okay. And this person just texted back. Actually, this wonderful texter also texted me hints for daylilies, too, which I appreciate.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, right? I was really concerned for your daylily.
Thank you very
much.
Like,
I was going to tell my wife Eva about it.
But then anyway, sorry, they followed up. This is the person that their older sibling or their sibling is not giving them information.
Yeah.
They said, so there's no way to know? How do we know what one third even is?
Yeah.
Or if they're, you got, the answer is court, right?
Yeah. You know, we go back to flip the script, right? It's, you know, if you're drafting it, you know, you either created this committee or you created this
chaos.
right, exactly. You might, it's possible.
Chaos or committee.
You know, you think of things. I mean, I had my friend Thomas Vaughn would say, when you plan your estate, you think about your worst child and you think about your best child.
Oh my God. I don't want to accuse the 331 of being one of the... Maybe, and I, my parents did a trust once, and they were told, just name the oldest.
Yeah.
And they followed up, and they were like, can we have two? And they're like, eh, just name the oldest. I think that was bad advice, well, because I'm not the oldest. But anyways, they're going to change it, just so everyone knows my personal life. I guess what I'm saying is, it's unfortunate, this 331. Yeah. Maybe talk to that sibling some more.
Yeah.
Really try and get that, I mean, like, really use that sibling influence to be like, look. Yeah.
Take them some lilies, man.
Take them some My Day lilies. Be like, let me see this thing.
Yeah, 100%.
But you could probably tell them, if you don't, I'm getting a lawyer and we're going to court on this.
Yeah, yeah. And why would you do that against your own money?
Right. And exactly. And because this person ultimately will likely have to show them what's in there at some point, right?
Yeah. When it goes to court, you know, who knows?
But the court would at least send the money where it's supposed to go, right?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe.
What do you mean, maybe?
It really, you know, you got to put on a really good argument sometimes for things.
Hold on, no. I got to understand this, Marcos. Yeah. If it's written in a trust, I'm splitting this estate amongst my three kids.
Yeah.
Even if only one is named the trustee, and that person is the only one to look at the trust, that trustee has to give the other two-thirds to the other heirs, right?
Yeah, according to the trust, they should do that.
Okay, so then if I take them to court, most likely the judge or whoever determines this will look at it, and that's what will happen, right?
If it goes that way, yes.
You're giving me too many.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. But that's, yes. Like, let's say without anything else, right, in a vacuum, yes, absolutely. The judge will say, give them their money. They're entitled to their money.
Okay.
In a vacuum.
Okay. Let's just live in this vacuum for a little bit.
Cool. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
You're a lawyer. You're giving me some lawyer speak here.
Yeah. Well, you know, And that's the good and bad part of, you know, when you plan this way, if you wanted this document to be confidential and you knew that that's what was going to be the case, then I could see the importance behind not wanting to release the trust to just, even if it is your siblings, right? So I get that part of it, but I also get the part of, you know, why are you being that way?
Yeah. And Six Rio says, why not give a copy of the trust to all the children? The parents maybe didn't think of that.
Yeah,
they didn't want that.
Right.
So
that's true.
You got to respect both those things. Yeah. Let's take a break. Can you hang on a little longer?
Yeah, sure.
Whatever. All right. Okay, cool. I got more Daylily talk and more estate planning. We got more calls coming in. We got more texts coming in. It's 2:27. We'll take a break. We'll have the news and more with Marcos. You can reach Marcos Resendiz, by the way, at 773-542-3660. More after this on WGN. Okay, a few more minutes here, and let's get legal powered by the Illinois State Bar Association with Marcos A. Resendiz. What does the A stand for, Marcos, by the
Armando.
Way? Armando.
Armando?
Yep. Sachs Law, S-A-X Law. Best way to reach you is 773-542-3660, or if you want to email instead, info@mresendizlaw.com, resendizlaw.com.
I challenged John to say it that way, and he's saying it. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there we go. I'm trying. Am I saying it right?
You are, yeah. Okay, good. That's awesome.
All right, here's a couple questions. 815, I have one daughter and a will. Is there any situation that my wife and I should create a trust? And if so, how much does that cost about?
Yeah. I'm not a flashy lawyer guy, right? Like, I didn't grow up being an attorney, you know? So to me, like, the cost of things really, you know, drives my decision making. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not that, I guess, like, nothing against the people that drive flashy cars. Like, maybe they use that as well. I think from the perspective of, you know, what's going to be the most beneficial or productive, I think a trust, you know, would just be the go-to, I think, for a majority of things, right?
Why? Because it avoids the probate? Is that the biggest thing?
I think so. I think that's a large part of why. Also, you really go into a lot more detail with a trust on what it is that you want versus, you know, a basic estate plan like a will. You know, things that can survive, you know, several decades, right? And so if you outlined it with specificity and then you're able to much easier modify it, you know, yourself, so long as you have capacity, right? I think it, you know, it, along with avoiding probate, it leaves an instruction manual for those that come after you.
Any sense on a cost? I mean, I guess it does it vary depending on how complicated the estate is?
Yeah, I would say, I think that's a fair response to that. Like, it really depends on, you know, the size of the estate, the complexity of, you know, what's going into the estate, right? You know, how much planning is involved, really, I think, really guides you on how much it'll cost. But I will say that you're looking in the thousands, right, for that.
Not the tens of thousands, probably.
Yeah.
But not, you know, the hundreds.
I mean, I hope that it is 10,000, because that means that you have like millions of dollars, maybe.
Right. Or that's,
like,
it, you that's know, true. Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, hopefully it's not a situational thing that it's so costly to draft it. But, you know, if you're, I would think the size of the estate and then also the complexity would, you know, really be a factor as to, you know, what.
So the benefits of paying a couple thousand dollars to get a trust would be that, if you're assuming your estate's over 100 grand, which most estates are for a lot of our listeners, not everyone, of course, but a lot of them are, you avoid probate. What happens in probate? Basically, the vultures get at it first, right? Should I not say vultures? No, people that are owed money.
That's funny. Sure.
Well, no,
let's
like
go with vultures. Let's go
with vultures. I know people
like
scan. There are software programs out there for healthcare companies, for credit card companies, to scan obituaries to find out who died to go get the debt that you may owe them.
Yeah.
And a lot of people might say, well, good, you owe them that debt, and that's fine. Yeah. So maybe I shouldn't call them vultures. They're coming after what they want and what they say they are owed. But they get paid before you do, or your heirs do, right?
Well, so yes and no, because
of course, Marcos.
Yeah, no. If you know, if that's not your debt, right? It shouldn't. It's not your responsibility. But you're absolutely right. If there is money left over from, you know, the loved one or the person that passed, the creditors, and there's a list of like claims that could be filed, and a priority list as well, on who can file a claim. And you're right. You know, debts and taxes, you know, they come first, and attorney's fees as well, right? Which is, I think it's important to plan, because, you know, you know, you should guide all of your, you know, decisions on cost, but, you know, I think it's fair to say that cost is a factor.
Yeah, and taxes too. I didn't even think about that. That's
too,
a huge thing. I guess what I'm saying is, generally speaking, Marcos.
Yeah. Thank you.
In a vacuum.
Yeah.
In a vacuum.
Yeah.
Most people, if you pay a couple thousand dollars for a trust, there is likely going to be that or more saved for your heirs, generally speaking.
Yeah, 100%. Well, you know, and I'll tell you that I think a ballpark for expenses, you know, you might be looking, you know, at a 10% of, you know, what you have.
Mm-hmm. This is a great question. I'm glad we got it, because I think I know the answer, but I'll let you do it, Marcos.
Sure.
I'm in my mid-60s. My wife is in her mid-50s. Is it wise of us to put our estate, I think they mean like their property, into our children's name and leave it there now to avoid all this after we pass?
Yeah, that happens. That does happen, you know, because the idea is, you know, it's gonna be left to them anyway, and, you know, they can take care of it now. You know, it does create, you know, some, you know, potential issues. Let's assume, you know, that the county that you're in offers you exemptions for being a resident of that property, right? Well, that goes away if you're no longer the owner of that property because you transferred it, you know, to your children. So whatever benefits you're receiving as a part of that, or even, let's say, your mortgage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, the mortgage is, if there is one, right, comes superior to, you know, any transfer that you've done to your children. So, you know, that you don't really get away from that. I mean, the mortgage will get
still
paid.
In your name,
yeah,
right,
it's still in your name. Also, you know, the potential tax liability, you know, on the kids, you know, if you do that now versus, you know, just letting them, you know, do what they're doing without that tax obligation.
Let's explain that, because once, if you put your kid's name on your estate, now they're going to pay tax when they sell that, if they sell that estate down the line. They're going to pay taxes from the moment they were put on that estate's name, right?
Yeah. So
that's the reset, as opposed to when you pass.
Yeah, I think so, because it's, you know, and maybe you could classify it as like a gift or something, you know, much later, but you're still kind of now in this bubble where, okay, now we have to make a determination. Was this, you know, property now part of my asset and not necessarily an inheritance, which is taxed differently, you know, for having.
So it's an option, but talk to someone,
option,
talk
difficult.
To a lawyer.
Yeah.
There's a lot of complications there. You could talk to Marcos Resendiz.
Yeah.
773-542-3660. You're like a really humble guy.
Hey,
I'm
thanks.
Like, call Marcos. You're like, if you want to, you can call me.
Well, you know, I think you should go with the person that you can really trust, right? The person that you can tell. I did criminal law for like 10 seconds. And I remember sitting there with the defendant and the attorney that was helping me or that was teaching me how to do criminal law. And he told him, we sat in this room in jail, and he says, look, you got to tell me everything. I don't care what it is, good, bad. You have to be able to tell me these things because I can't represent you otherwise.
This is what the other lawyer told the defendant. Yeah, this is what the other
said. And he's absolutely right. Like, someone that you're able to just kind of shed that, you know, information everything. That you have, everything.
And that you think that even if it's not criminal law, if it's whatever, you're talking
to a lawyer. You have to be able to trust that individual with that level of, you know, confidence, you know, because the details matter.
That's a hard decision because if someone calls you, they got to establish that trust quick, right?
Yeah.
How do you establish that with clients then? Why do they trust you?
I don't know. I've not done a poll as to why, like, you know, people continue to refer me or anything like that. Like, I think that's probably a good marketing tool, but I just don't.
You're like a super lawyer, though.
Yeah. Am I?
I don't know. I thought you were.
I don't think I...
You don't qualify for that yet?
No, I qualified. I was going to say something else, but
okay, good.
Super Lawyers is a good place.
It is a good place.
Yeah.
All right, Marcos, you got to come back again, okay?
Okay.
All right, good.
I was going to say, maybe. I don't know.
Wow, I'm going to turn his mic off before he says anything else. Right? I don't know. Yeah, Marcos, you'll come back again. Marcos Resendiz, attorney at law, Sax Law. That's SAX Law.
Yeah.
The number is 773-542-3660. You're an interesting dude. I like you, Marcos.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We'll talk soon, okay?
Yep.
All right. We'll take a break.